Joe.
Hi, Liz. Excited to be here today. Good. The interview with Fidelcia Garcia is amazing.
So amazing. In fact, I think it's so amazing, it's going to be two episodes.
We're going to have to split it into two episodes.
We are. But I don't want to cut anything because it's all just so useful.
It's way too good. So I'm going to say this right now. So who sign shop owners, if you're listening to this, or managers, or HR, prospective HR managers, you have got to listen to this episode in full. This is, it's technical. There's a lot of information. I get it. It might be overload a little bit, but man, is it going to help you grow a healthy business and keep you out of trouble.
Absolutely. And again, we're splitting it into two episodes, so hopefully that'll make it a little bit easier to digest because it is a lot. So they might be shorter than our typical interview episodes, but not by much, honestly, because it's just a lot of information. But I do think that all of it's so pertinent. As someone who owns a small business, like, oh my gosh, just listen to it. I wish I knew all of this stuff without having to research it.
I wish I knew all of this stuff before I got myself in so much trouble over the years. But anyway, I'm so appreciative that Fidelcia spent so much time with us today. And, you know, she has some experience with the sign industry. I won't divulge the background story there, but she's very familiar with the sign industry. And of course, she's very passionate about HR and from a perspective of helping employees. So I think everyone's going to really enjoy listening to her and take notes. And then we're also, you know, going to put in the show notes ways to get a hold of her if you do need to work with an HR consultant. So
yeah, she is an HR consultant. So just keep that in mind. And she specializes in small business, which is so different. As someone who's worked for small and large businesses that has gotten HR thrown on her, like I'm telling you, small and large companies, HR is so
Yep. So and she's, different. She specializes in 5 to 50 employee companies and manufacturing. Exactly. So that's the sweet spot for sign shops. And so I
her name is Fidelcia Garcia. Yes. We didn't even say that. We're so excited about this.
No, one. I said Fidelcia. Did you? Oh, okay. I did. Well, before we kick off, I always like to give a very special shout out to our sponsors. We're super grateful for the support that we receive from Inktabo. They are very passionate about the print and sign industry. And so they have amazing tools. If you go to inktabo.com, you'll learn about Sign Tracker, which you can also check out at sign-tracker.com. You'll learn about Printabo and Clarity. Those are production management softwares for sign and print shops. Of course, there's Inksoft and OMG for stores, and there's Graphics Flow for art management and art resources and design resources. So go to inktabo.com and you'll learn all about their products and how they can help you. Well, another thing too is reach out to them if you have questions, whether it's through chat or email or phone calling. There is live people that really care about you. They're based here in the United States, well, except for Clarity. They're all based in the UK. So if you're one of our UK listeners, go to claritygo.com for Clarity. But yes, they're great to talk to. A lot of industry folks that work at the software company, so they're there to help you.
We'd also like to say hi to our friends at Sign Builder Illustrated. If you haven't already, read our monthly column in the magazine. And if you're not subscribed to it in the mail, you can always read it online at signshop.com. Also, if you're not already, well, this should be airing while we're there, and hopefully we're seeing you in person at the ISA Expo. So we'd like to say hi to all our friends at ISA, huge fans of the International Sign Association. Of course, we're big fans of the Expo. We are being influencers probably as you're watching this. So check it out.
The cool thing about being part of the International Sign Association and your local sign associations, whether it's Texas Sign Association, California Sign, I mean, there's so many of them. If you go to ISA, you can see all the different associations in Canada. They're all tied into ISA. It's just a great place to be able to make connections, not only with vendors and suppliers and all that. Of course, they're there, but just to make connection with other sign shop owners and workers, you know, like you're an installer, you're a designer, to connect with other designers and exchange ideas. And
just like with anything in life, community is so important. It's what we try to foster in Behind the Signs on Facebook. But also education, like, why not surround yourself with peers that are doing the same thing that can, you can help each other grow and learn. And there's no better way to meet those people than to join your local sign association. And also on Behind the Signs. Without further ado, we're talking with Videlcia Garcia. She is an HR professional that specializes in HR for small businesses that range from 5 to 50 employees, probably less too, should there be less. But I think that's the typical range that people define. Yeah, and we're really excited to talk to her today and next week or next episode about HR.
Hey, everyone. We're super excited about today's guest, Videlcia Garcia. She is an expert on small business HR, and it's such a huge need, Liz. This comes up in the community all the time, right?
Yeah, I do want to say, like, our past few episodes have been such nerd level business owner episodes. It brings me such joy because it's just the things that most people don't necessarily want to talk about, but desperately need to know at the same time. So this is really exciting. This HR questions come up a lot.
Yeah. Our last recording that we did, we spent an hour talking about how to calculate your shop rate. Super exciting.
It was very
but exciting. Sean was a great guest. He was a great guest. So it's good. So that episode's going to drop before Videlcia. So, but this one is also super important because as we were talking about before we get started, you know, sign shops, typically, you know, when you think about a bigger size sign shop, you think, oh man, 10 employees to 15 employees, which in the sign industry, that's kind of huge considering there's 35,000 plus sign shops in the United States alone, and almost all of them are under 5 employees. So we're talking about mom and pop brick and mortar businesses that have the practical challenges of like, oh, how do I find and train really good employees? How do I keep really good employees? You know, and then all the other stuff, like how do I get enough jobs to pay the light bill and all that too. And then you start thinking about how am I supposed to manage employees correctly, right? The HR problem.
What
so that's
HR?
Why I super, yeah. What is HR? Yeah, that, let's yeah. start with that. What is HR? Elizabeth, why don't you tell us what HR is?
I think everyone knows that human relations. So it's basically the management of the people in your company. But that's not who should be talking about this. Like, as much as I would technically of the two of us be the person that should talk about this, Joe. Today we have Videlcia with us and she is the expert.
She is. And I'm excited because I'm going to make a confession before we get started. And Liz, you know this.
I do. I don't even know what you're going to say.
I'm going to talk about myself in the third person. Joe was terrible at HR. Like, I would just want to hire everyone. Someone could come to me and cry and say they really need a job. And I'd be like, okay, even if you're not qualified. And then they could do a whole bunch of things and I would just never, everything, and I would never fire them. And so, yeah, I tell you, one of the happiest days of my first company. My second company was easy because Elizabeth was in the beginning. So she's really good at this stuff. But my first company, one of my happiest days is when I hired somebody that could manage HR for me. And then all I had to do is, like, if we had to write somebody up or fire someone, just sit in the room and look sad with them. And everyone else would do the...
You just got to point your finger at the other person and be like, it's not me, it's them, it's their job. Yeah, right. That's what you prefer.
Well,
yeah, I like that you're saying Joe was bad at this. Like, just to be clear, Joe is still bad at this. He just doesn't have people.
Joe only has one person, and that's Joe. So when Joe flakes, Joe yells at himself, Joe moves on, Joe does better, Joe yeah. fires himself every other day, but you know. Well, Videlcia, we are so excited to have you here today as an HR expert. So if you could just take a few minutes and tell us, you know, a little bit about your background and how you got into HR and, you know, what you do for work and how all that
Perfect.
Works.
So thank you so much, Joe and Elizabeth, for having me here. I know your podcast is highly recommended in the sign industry, so being here today is an honor. My name is Videlcia Garcia. I'm the Director of People Operations for a nonprofit organization. I'm a human resources professional with over 15 years of experience. My expertise is actually helping small businesses, 5 to 50 employees. I help small business owners navigate complex employee relation issues and making sure they're following the law. So today I'm very happy to be here where I'll be sharing some tips that can probably help some of the business owners listening to us right now to make some of their HR challenges a little bit easier. Very happy to be here. So I can tell you about my career. I started working. So my experience is very diverse. I have a lot of experience with manufacturing, a lot of experience with small businesses, businesses as small as 5 employees, 10 employees, 25 employees. And I think small businesses have very unique challenges that are very different from large corporations. And that's why it's so important to sit down and have this type of conversation. So I'm very happy that you take the time to invite me and happy to be here.
We're so excited to have you. And thanks for taking the time. I think this episode is going to be really good. So if you are a sign shop owner, I know you're busy. And I know sometimes you click into podcasts, you start listening to them and then you click off. This is one that you should not do that. I'm just telling you right now, listen to this podcast episode.
One of the ones you should listen through, and it may be two. We'll see how it goes. But this is definitely one we're not going to spare, you know, any answer. We're just going to give as much as we can. I, like you, Videlcia, my background's accounting, but I specialized in small businesses. And as I'm sure you know, when it's a really small business, a lot of times HR gets thrown onto the accountant. So somehow I got a very fast track crash course in HR and have been kind of that designated HR person at many different types of companies, some, you know, as small as 3 and some as large as 400. So it's so intricate, HR. There's so much involved with it, but I could not agree more that small businesses, the needs for HR are so unique. The questions are really unique, and especially when you're in like this, you know, under 10 employees is really legally that area where it's gray, because you're not legally required to have a lot of the same things that over 10 employees have. You know, companies with over 10 or over 50 is another kind of milestone. But you still maybe should have some of those things in place. So we're going to kind of talk through, you know, a few of the things. So I think my first question that a lot of people come across as a small business is, what, let's assume you do have policies in place and you're running your small business at a large corporation, if, you know, or even a medium-sized business, there's an HR department. Like, Dad, when you had the HR person, if someone at SignTech had an HR complaint, they went to the HR person, right? But what happens when it's the owner that is HR and, you know, another role, or that they're playing all, you know, they're wearing all the hats? How, as a small business owner, how do you field HR complaints?
So this is a great question, because a lot of small business owners are in this position. So I feel like even if you are a small business owner and you don't have an actual HR, you had to assign someone who is there to be able to receive complaints, to be able to manage employees. It can be, if you are the business owner and you don't feel comfortable doing this job, I get it. You can assign a manager, someone with more experience dealing with this issue, so the employees can go to this person and have someone to talk to. But you don't want to leave the employees just trying to guess, like, who should they go to when they have an issue, and who should be the person reporting things like harassment or discrimination, or maybe they have an issue with their manager and they're not sure who to talk to. They had to be clear of who is the person to go to, even if this person is not the business owner. There should always be someone for them to go to. If the business is the business owner, it doesn't feel comfortable doing that, they should assign someone to do it. If there's nobody in the business that is ready to do that job, they can get someone from outside, like an outside consultant who can actually provide those services. But there should always be someone assigned to be able to support the team and be able to provide help and guidance to the employees.
Interesting. So there are outside companies, like consultant companies, that provide those services, I'd imagine for a fee, but a consultancy fee rather than an employee level.
Exactly. So something that sometimes business owners think is that bringing HR to the organization, they had to get a full-time person just to work for them all the time. And that's not the case. There's a lot of HR professionals out there that you can contact and just work on a contract basis. You can contact them and have them available to talk to their employees, to resolve different issues, to provide advice. And that's something very easy to find. So you can go ahead and get that if you don't have a lot of work to get, let's say, get an HR professional to work full-time or part-time. You can definitely get a contract person who is going to work with you based on the type of work that you have available. And that way you can keep the cost low and not having the need to have someone full-time just to dedicate it to HR.
Amazing.
Man, I wish I knew that was an option.
I know. I did know that was an option. I wish I would have gone with that option.
Especially for just like documenting everything, right? That's the big thing. And man, and as an owner, you're already sweating bullets when someone's standing in front of your desk complaining about this and that. And it's like, oh my gosh, where do I document this or what do I do? And that would be a great option.
Like onboarding, which I know we're going to get into, but the documents required, it's like having a professional that knows how to handle that and know what you need. That's a great option. But actually, that kind of leads me into my next question. And I think this, I don't know how common this is in other industries, although I feel like for some other small businesses I worked for, it was still very common. It's kind of helping business owners understand the difference between a contract or 1099 employee versus a W-2 employee. And what are the requirements surrounding those two types of employment?
So first, I wanted to clarify that there's no such thing as a contract employee. The right term is an independent contractor. An independent contractor is not an employee. So we're going to use this term independent contractor instead. So basically, an independent contractor is someone who's working for your organization based on a task. You have a task and this person is going to take care of that task. You don't have a commitment. This type of work arrangements is very popular with small businesses for different reasons. One of them is taxes. When you have independent contractor, you are not responsible to pay taxes. You don't have to pay employer taxes. So this person, the contractor, is responsible for paying the taxes. Also, another reason is the flexibility. When you have a business that has a low or high season, having contractors give you the flexibility of bringing contractors to your business when business is high and then terminating that relationship when business is low. No commitment at all. And the other reason is benefits. When you have an independent contractor, you're not required to provide benefits like medical, dental, vision, and you're not even required to provide things like unemployment insurance, workers' compensation, or disability insurance. So that can be very attractive to many small business owners because the opposite from a regular employee. For employees, you do have to pay taxes. You have a commitment with that employee, and also you are responsible to provide benefits. So a lot of business owners think like, well, maybe getting a contractor can be a good idea. But this can be very tricky because mislabeling an employee for a contractor is one of the most common and costly mistakes business owners make. If you have a contractor, you have to understand that this person is working on a project. You are not managing the person. So you're not allowed to tell the person how many hours they're going to be working, what time they had to start working, what time they finish working, how they're going to accomplish that task. You're providing a task and that's it. And then you're responsible for looking at the end result, but not really having any idea what happened in between or how the job is going to get done. At the same time, you cannot tell this person where they're going to work. If this person decides that they want to kind of work from home, be remote, and they're able to do so, the person has the right to do so as well, because this is not an employee. You only have control of the assignment and the end result. You don't have control of the actual project or how the project is going to be done. So if you're okay with that, yes, you can have a contractor. If you want someone that you are going to be managing, that you're going to be, that you're going to have on your office every day, or that you're going to keep an eye on, then having a contractor is not a good idea. We have seen things like Uber, that have had issues in the past because of their mislabeling contractors as when they're really being treated as employees. One way to see the contractors is, for example, you call the water company because you have a leak in your shop. And the water company is going to send someone to your shop to check on the leak. And this person, they're going to give you a time frame. They're not going to give you the time the person is going to show up. They're just a time frame so you can open the door, right? The person is going to come in. You're going to show the person where the leak is happening. But that's it. You're not going to tell the person the tool they're going to be using. You're not going to tell this person how they're going to fix the leak. And you're not going to monitor how long the person is going to take fixing the leak. And that's exactly what a contractor is. You're bringing someone to take care of a task, and that's all. So if you're okay with that, yes, you can bring a contractor, but you have to be very careful of mislabeling employees for contractors.
Like if you were doing a sign design and you had one project that you're sending out to a designer to do the one project, you can tell them, I need it done by this date, but you can't tell them when to work on it or how to work on it. You can tell them what your expectations are for that one project. It wouldn't be ongoing projects. It's just that one sign project.
Right. So just so everyone's super clear too, because if you have a brand new shop and it's just you, you're, you know, solo entrepreneur and you're starting your shop and you get to that point where you're feeling overwhelmed and you want to hire that first employee, I feel like a lot of small businesses, especially labor-focused businesses, will bring somebody on as a subcontractor. But they don't quite follow the parameters, right? So if you're making a sign and you're shipping it out to an installer and it needs to be installed by Friday, that's a task and that's okay. And then they're a 1099 contractor. But if you're overwhelmed and you're feeling like you need to bring a designer on board and you say, hey, look, we're really small. I really can't afford to pay benefits or anything like that right now. I'm going to bring you in as a contractor, but you need to be here every morning at, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning and work till 5. You're going to get yourself in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. There was somewhere I read long ago that was saying this was more about providing equipment. So this would be more on the office side of things. But if you're providing equipment, I think there was some rule where contractors can use their own equipment, but employees are supposed to use company supplied equipment. I don't know how true that was, but
yeah, so that's really varies depending on the organization. Yes, usually for employees, organizations provide their own equipment to be able to provide privacy and make sure their data is being protected. And then contractors have the right to use their own equipment. But you can also ask contractors to use your own equipment. If you have, for example, a specialized software that they don't have access to, then at that point you should be providing that to the contractor if they need it for work. But other than that, mostly contractors use their own equipment, and for employees, due to the privacy concerns, they should usually use the company equipment.
See, great. So it's less of a legal requirement and more of a security suggestion. Yeah.
So I think this kind of transitions really well into the next question. And, you know, we actually just had a conversation a couple weeks ago with a bunch of folks from the International Sign Association about trying to attract new talent and young people to the industry, right? It seems to be a big problem in the sign industry. You have a lot of shops that are multi-generational. And so, you know, the kids will take over the dad shop and the granddad shop and that sort of thing. But, you know, getting young people excited about the sign industry in particular, it's not that easy because there's very few, like there's a few, I shouldn't say there's none, but you can't show up at community college one day and say, hey, I want to major in, you know, sign manufacturing. So what are some of the ways that you feel, you know, companies like small brick and mortar companies, sign industry, you know, sign companies in particular, can go out and creatively find employees? Like, what are some suggestions you might have to find qualified employees?
So, yeah, like you mentioned, recruitment is very, very challenging nowadays. You know, people are not just looking for a job and a paycheck. They're looking for other things. They're looking for benefits. And benefits for small businesses are extremely expensive. To find quality benefits and affordable benefits is very difficult. And also, they're looking for experience. So you have to be able to kind of provide the whole picture for them to feel your business is attractive or is an option. One of the things that I would highly recommend to shop owners is to build relationships. I know that most of the recruitment process happens online nowadays, but relationships are still very important. So start building relationships, relationships with community colleges, relationship with different schools that are preparing this new generation of designers. So make sure you keep a strong relationship with them. You can reach out to the teachers. You can find out if they have job fairs and kind of participate in those type of activities to create a relationship and kind of become part of the community. And I'm sure that way you'll be able to find a lot of candidates. Another way is also online. You, for example, most shops probably have pages like Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn, or maybe TikTok. And I know that a lot of shops use those channels just to showcase what they do, their work, the different signs or designs. But think about using those channels to promote different positions and to attract talent. Usually when a person is looking for a job, they usually go to different companies and they check their company website or they check the social media and they want to see how's the culture. So try to showcase your culture online too. If you do employment recognition, like let's say that you do recognizing the employer of the month, make sure you put it online as well so people can see that you have that type of programs. Also, if you do a holiday lunch for your team, make sure you showcase the holiday lunch as well. If you do summer picnics, make sure you showcase the picnic as well, because the new generation, like I said, is not only looking for a paycheck, they're looking for a whole experience. They're looking for benefits and they're looking for a culture where they can see themselves. And that can make the difference between a job that is a job offer from another sign shop that has no information about the culture and your sign shop that is actually showcasing the different activities they do with employees. That can definitely make a difference on the type of talent they're going to attract and the choice the people who are looking for jobs are going to make just based on that information.
I love that suggestion, actually. We have a couple of people in the Behind the Science community. I don't know if you've seen Elizabeth. I always let the post go through because I think they're cool. But what a great way to promote the culture of your business, right? They'll show parties or employee of the month where someone's holding up a plaque or whatever. That's great. That's great. Celebrate your culture and make it public. You know what I mean? Because then people, yeah, you're right. I mean, they're going to want to go to places that look fun, you know, fun to work at, and then where they they're recognized, their good work is recognized.
Yeah. I mean, we, as a small business have done a lot of that on social media, and I can confirm it works so well. We get people emailing us, I want to say daily, but I'll say weekly, but it's multiple every week asking if we're hiring or if we have internships open, because we're constantly promoting our culture online. Our culture is very strong here. That's how it's gotten so strong, right? Like that, just we're constantly on social media. We also do awards. I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Our awards do not come with plaques, but they do come with some fun prizes.
Your awards. Show me the cash.
It's one of the choices. It's always one of the choices. Yeah. So, that is great. And also, kind of to your point, Videlcia, here in Austin, like our community college program, they require students to have internships at a certain point in their degree. And also some require apprenticeships. So, you know, if you have that relationship with the college or with those instructors, then they can always recommend your company.
Yeah. And if you don't live near a community college, I think we talked about this at one episode last year. There was a local sign shop here and it actually ended up being in the Austin Business Journal. That's how I know about it. But it was a sign shop that they were having a like an open house day for high school kids to come in for a day to help build signs and all that. And they ended up getting a couple of really good kids out of that became employees. So
yeah, especially now, cause there are a lot of, technical high schools.
Talking about employees, Chris is the one of the on the creative team at Inktavo. Chris, you're amazing. Chris Sabalas, our editor and producer of the Behind the Science podcast. Chris, you're amazing. Keep this in the video. All right. Since we're focusing on great employees.
So I think that that's actually a great segue into the next great part of this question, which is you found some great candidates, wherever you went to find them, let's talk about onboarding. It's always very complicated. I think it can be a little daunting to some people. For us, you know, I'm not sure we did this in the right order, but we might have should had a employee handbook prior to an employee. So let's talk first about employee handbooks. Those seem overwhelming to a lot of people because they don't know what's supposed to be in them. So if you strip out, you know, for us, ours is really culture defining in our employee handbook. But we also have a lot of required onboarding type documents in that handbook. So I think for everyone listening today, Videlcia, could you help us understand, like, what are the bare minimum things a company should have in their employee handbook?
Yeah, so this is a great piece of part of what the organization is going to look like. You know, like Liz mentioned, not a lot of people think about creating the employee handbook just when they have one employee. But this is good because when you take care of the employee handbook, you're creating a foundation of how the organization is going to look like. Yes, you can do the employee handbook when you have 10, 20, 50 employees. That's okay. I have done employee handbook for an organization that was open for 50 years with 120 employees, the first employee handbook after 50 years. So it's okay.
Wow. Hey, it was on the things to do list for a long time.
Yeah, that's exactly what they told me. And it's fine. You know, at least you've reached the point when you see and you recognize the need for an employee handbook. So regardless of where you are, you can put together an employee handbook. Don't feel bad. It's okay. There are people that have been doing worse. So then what should you include in the employee handbook? So first you have to think about the policies. You can have a policy related to harassment. What is the company stand when it comes to harassment? And what is the procedure if you need to make a harassment complaint? Also anti-discrimination policies as well. Then we're going to move to expectations. What is your policy when it comes to attendance? What is your policy when it comes to dress code? What is your policy when it comes to how you behave at work? So those are part of the expectations. Then we go to the benefits. You want to also detail some of the benefits that you offer, when the benefits are available, and what happens after termination with those benefits as well. And then you can also add information about your culture, like the different things that you do for the employees, how you value the employees, how the organization feels about the employees as well. So that's a very simple, and I believe it's a very complete overview of what an employee handbook should look like. There's definitely a lot of larger and more complex employee handbooks, but if you're going to create one, that's enough information to be able to begin. And then as you grow and see the need for all the policies to be added, you can do so as well. So employee handbook should be a live document. It's not a document that you create today and then you forget about it. It should be a document that you at least review once a year, and then you keep making changes and adding as you need to.
Are there resources? Because where do you start? You know, just open up a blank Microsoft Word document or Google Doc and just start typing one out? Like, what do you recommend for a small shop, you know, sign shop to go and at least get some kind of a...
So if you have an employee system, like an IRS system, something like ADP or Paychecks or any type of HRIS system, they usually have already employee handbooks that are already built and you can just download and customize it to your needs. There's also employee handbooks online that are available. I just want you to be mindful that when you go online, you're going to find a lot of information and not all the information is reliable. So make sure that if you go online to download an employee handbook, you're downloading the employee handbook from a reliable source. Maybe the Society for Human Resources can be a good source, or one of those companies like Paychecks or ADP. You can download it and customize it to your needs. That's the easiest, probably most affordable way to do an employee handbook. If you want something more complex and customized to your business, then you can reach out to an HR professional. And that's one of the projects that an HR professional can help you do and put together as a contract outsource project.
I think that would be worth the investment to make sure it's done right, just because of the liability. Yeah, exactly.
You didn't do it that way. I think it's worth the investment.
I wonder if does the SBA have resources for that too?
I'm sure they do. We'll look into that. And if they do, we'll link it in the notes below. That's a really good question. You know, I'm a little fortunate that I have an attorney for a mother. So she did review a lot of my a lot of my documents when building the handbook. Another thing that we have in ours is just an NDA. That's more for internal processes that we don't want disclosed to other companies should someone leave.
Okay, I also want to say that NDA is a common one, but there's a lot of changes happening around the country in different states banning NDA. So yeah, it's okay to have one, but you have to be mindful of how the law is changing and what is being allowed and not what not to be part of the NDA.
Again, very fortunate that I have an attorney for a mother. So that's something HR professional can help with.
That's what I was going to say. Again, it's well worth spending the money for an HR consultant for the, I think this part of it is super important because then we start getting into liability, right? And I think that kind of segues into the next.
Well, before we get there, I want to ask you, outside of an employee handbook, what other documents should you be looking at when you're onboarding an employee?
So when you're doing onboarding, you have to do the I-9 form, which is the verification of documents. Some states require it to do that, the I-9 form. Some others is just a thing that you can do. I always suggest doing it, even if your state doesn't require it. That way you can have your business set up for success. Also, you have to provide W-4 and W-2 forms. Those are taxes to collect tax information for the employees. You also have to provide a form to give direct deposit information. Most organizations only do direct deposits nowadays, so I would suggest to do that as well. I always say that when you have to collect information for an employee, you have to do it on day one. If you let day one pass, it's going to be very difficult to collect the information. So the first day, they do everything for you, and they will give you anything you need, and they will do whatever you want. But then after that, things get a little more complicated. So you have to make sure you collect everything on day one. So those are the documents I suggest. Also, the offer letter, of course. You have to make sure you provide an offer letter, not only indicating what you're doing for the employee, like the rate and also how many hours they person is going to work, but also expectations. What is the schedule? Is this a full-time or a part-time job? Is this person exempt or not exempt? So all that information is to be included on the offer letter, and you have to make sure you provide that information since day one. So both ends are clear. What are the terms and conditions of the employment?
Yeah, excellent. And I know from an accounting perspective, It does vary state to state, and sometimes your accounting program will do this for you. But the other things that you need to keep in mind is you have to report that employee to the state that you hired them in. So for us, it's state of Texas. So we have to report to the state of Texas that we've hired someone. That's both to the unemployment system and to the state comptroller.
Yeah, in New York, in New York, New Jersey have the same requirements. It's a report. Actually, the HRIS systems provides the information directly to the Department of Labor, and that way they know how many employees you have every quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think QuickBooks also takes care of some of it, depending on what level of QuickBooks you use, because they kind of do a basic level that's not like it's not ADP. Is it ADP? Right. Paychecks is the other one. It's not quite that level, but they do have higher tiers where the payroll tiers where it gets to that level and they report things for you, which is also, side note, worth the money. Just throwing it out there.
I also think, in the sign industry especially, it's really important that you install a tracking chip in all your employees.
Definitely. Yeah. You can just do it easily with the AirTag. You just sew it in.
My HR mind is like, wait a minute.
You must wear this AirTag.